Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to the Mental Power Hour. I am your host, T. LaVon Lawrence, talking to you from sunny Fort Walton Beach, Florida, home of crystal clear emerald green waters and sugar white sandy beaches. Again, I'd like to welcome you to the Mental Power Hour. It's been one incredible week. It's the more I do this, the more that I can plainly see that there is a great demand out there for mental fitness and brain training. And the results of my doing this show is revealing that ever more clearly. The feedback that I'm getting from everyone and the reactions I'm getting from people, even the reactions I'm getting from other show hosts, clearly shows that I'm doing a good job. And of course, it's my ambition to do the best job I possibly can. I've never done a radio show myself. So my keen ambition is to make sure that I'm not only giving you the meat, I also want to make sure that you enjoy yourself while you're listening. So being who I am, you can guarantee that over the weeks and months to come, I will be ensuring that the quality of this radio show and my own delivery is going to be worthy of your attention. This week, I had a wonderful appearance on the Jesse Bowen Show, a fantastic trainer, a college coach, owns his own martial arts studio, and he's been training people for many years, a master of the Silva mind training system. And I had the privilege of being on his show, and we discussed some interesting topics, a couple of which I'll bring up here on the show today. But today's main topic is about real-life meditation, how the things you learn in meditative practices, if you're a person who's been exposed to meditative practices, or if you're someone who's interested in meditation itself as a relief to some of your own life ills, how those practices can be applied to every aspect of your life to elevate your experience and to help you perform in a superior way. Now, many people who've been exposed to meditation come to me and they have particular questions, which surprises me that people who've been in one or another form of meditation for years even have these questions to ask in the first place, because from what I've learned in studying meditation, and from doing certain forms of meditation, because as a brain trainer, it's very important to me to investigate these things, the fundamental lessons that can be learned through meditation, to me, should be the highest priority at the beginning of meditation, so that the rewards that come from doing the practices keep a person doing it for years and years to come. There's no reason for a person, after they've been doing meditation for 3-4 years, to have the same sorts of problems of a person who's never trained their brain in the first place. So we're going to discuss that, and mainly there's 10 things you ought to be able to achieve through meditation. There's certain knowledge that you should be able to possess through meditation, at least within the first year of doing it, if not the first few months. The knowledge of which should help transform your life, should make the experience of life a radically different thing for you than the people around you. There's also 10 scenarios where your meditation training should rescue you. And I mean literally. There's 10 scenarios, 10 common problems that human beings deal with that your meditation practice should rescue you from those things, and you should not suffer the way that the average untrained person suffers. And we're going to go over those things. We're going to go over the 10 things you should be achieving through meditation and the 10 scenarios where meditation training should rescue you. And the way I'm going to go over that training is I'm going to just list the 10 things you should be achieving and the 10 scenarios to be rescued, and then I'll go over them one by one. I can pretty much guarantee you that if you're listening to this show right now and you've had any experience with meditation, or if you're even thinking about getting into meditation, the things I'm going to cover will apply to you. There's no way to escape it. These things will apply to you because, one, you're a human being. Two, you're in modern society. And as a person who's interested in training your brain, in resculpting your neural anatomy to make yourself mentally stronger, give yourself more endurance and greater mental flexibility, in the process of being that kind of a person, you're guaranteed to run across these things, and it is these things that are going to make you stronger and make you better. Now, I'm going to have to go over a couple things just to make sure that we're clear. This show is for information and education purposes only. It is not meant to take the place of legitimate, competent, professional advice from someone working in the mental health community. The reason I give this disclaimer is because I do have certain trainees who are simultaneously seeing a particular type of therapist or analyst or psychiatrist, or they're undergoing a mental health routine that involves medicines. And inevitably, I get the question, hey, should I go off my meds? Do I have to keep seeing this doctor? And my answer to them is always yes. But you should inform them as to what you're doing in mental training and the kind of cognitive behavioral therapy that you're getting and the benefits and the techniques so that they're aware of what you're doing. Unfortunately, there are people in the mental health care community who are self-serving and whose only interest is to keep you locked into the system because that's how they make money. But there are some good people out there who really are rooting for you and who want you to do your very best. So in any case, I don't want anyone to think that the advice that you get from me is meant to replace any legitimate prescriptions or advice from your doctor. If you think you have any kind of a mental health issue, serious mental health issue, you should consult your doctor. This week, I appeared on the Jesse Bowen Show, and one of the main things discussed is dealing with the economy and the importance of being able to maintain mental focus amongst all this negativity so that you can make yourself immune to the type of damage that's being done that really is unnecessary, so that you can create your own economy, so that you can operate in defiance of the negativity that's going on around you. Because here's a secret, and it shouldn't be a secret. Our government should be giving out this information. They should be hammering it from the pulpit. All the governments, all responsible leaders should be letting everybody know. there's no less money available today than there was 2 years ago. There's no drought of money. There's no drought of gold or jewels or precious metals. Everything that's going on in the world economy today is based on something we're going to talk about today, which if you're a meditator, you should already know. But if you don't know, we're definitely going to talk about it. It's all based on thought, on ideas, on concepts. The exchange of one idea for another. The real truth is that this economy should not be in trouble, but it is in trouble because somebody cannot control their thinking. Hundreds of millions of people are not driving their own brains, are not in charge of what they think, how they think. Right now, leaders, governments, in an hour, if they desire, if they had the knowledge, could totally reverse the direction of the world economies. In less than an hour, they could do this. But what do people know? What do people know about their own thoughts, emotions, impulses, their own perception, their own assumptions and beliefs and illusions that they take to be reality? And I am not talking esoterics here. I'm not talking faraway fairyland ideas. I'm talking about the ultimate reality that we live from as individuals every single day. Our own mind. If the presidents, the commissioners, the governors, the mayors, the prime ministers, the kings, the queens, if these people truly knew themselves and knew their minds and knew their thoughts, we would not be in this situation. It would have been turned around months ago, if not years ago, if it ever would have occurred at all. Now, there are pragmatists out there and so-called realists who will doubt this. But there is nothing that we do, no establishment that we create, no structures and governments and the civilian world, and business and any endeavor that we establish in this world that is not driven by our own thoughts and emotions. And at any moment, if we could get enough people to get a clue into the operation of their own mind, within 1 hour, we could turn the world economy around. I am telling you this. But instead, what do we get? A bunch of crybabies standing in news conferences, whining about how bad things are, how people are hurting, how people are desperate, how things are spiraling out of control. This is what we get from leaders? Is this the best they can do? Self-serving, get me elected, keep me in rhetoric, depend on me, I'll save you? When in truth, they can't even save themselves? Is this the best that they can do? Well, we're the ones who put them up there. Some leadership, thanks a lot. Thank you for telling me how terrible things are and how terrible things are going to be. wow, I could have done that myself. Imagine if we had leaders, influencers, in key places who knew the power of thought, who knew the strength of ideas, how to direct them, how to distribute them to the populace, how to make sure that the populace is educated, not in rote memorization so that they can become clones at a business or a factory somewhere, but educated into self-reliance, to be able to be masters of their own mind. Imagine if we had leaders who understood this fact, what they could do, how they could really help the people. What kinds of ideas would they put out at the news conference? How would they remind the people what's possible, what can be done right here, right now, by every single individual out there? There is no excuse, especially in any somewhat free society, for there to be poverty, crime, fear, any form of chaos, ignorance, illiteracy. No vision, the people perish. Vision. And not sloganeering vision, actual vision, actual knowledge, actual wisdom to perpetuate out across the masses so that it grows, takes hold, takes root, springs upward, so that not just a few people have the inner power they need to make something good happen in their own lives and the lives of other people, but so that everybody has the knowledge and has the wisdom and the strength and the self-control and the self-discipline they need to create the good life, to give unto others so that they can receive in return. You want to create your own economy. Your own economy already exists inside you. But for your thoughts, but for your not realizing it, but for your wrongful focus onto the wrong ideas, the right idea turns focus inward, and you tap into the resources that you already have. And every single person out there listening to me has the resources inside themselves to where if you would only turn your attention to it, you could open the floodgates and give. I don't care if you don't have a single cent to your name. All you got to do is turn on the floodgates of your ability and unleash it. It will all turn around. Every single person out there. But you have to shut out all the ideas that are floating around from people who simply don't understand the power of an idea. Whether the idea be positive or it be negative, they don't understand. And they shift with the wind. Everything's going great. Oh, wow. Hey, sky's the limit. Somebody turns to them and says, oh, everything's not great. It's going to go bad. Then they turn around and they broadcast that same idea to others and they start to react to that idea. They live their lives by that idea. And guess what? Self-fulfilling prophecy. And it was only an idea. It was just a thought, a word. And they bought into it. They decided that they would live from it that it mattered, that it was reality. In fact, it's just an idea. It's just a thought. That's why fear and concepts of limitation are so damaging. You must not allow such things to determine how you live. You must not allow such things to take root in your mind, because once they get in, your perception becomes that. You see things as the thought dictates, and that's why mental training is so important. You've got to master the nature of thought. You've got to be a self-sufficient human being in mind, so that you determine your reality, no one else. And again, I'm not talking esoterics. I'm talking about the child who grows up beneath the mother or the father, whose limitations get passed on down to the child in the form of ideas. You can't do this. There's no possibility of this thing occurring. You'll never amount to anything. Why are you looking so high? Keep your feet on the ground. You're ugly. You're fat. You're dumb. You're stupid. He's better than you. She's better than you. They're better than us. These are ideas, concepts. They get planted in the fertile brain, and they grow and they expand until they become a reality for that young child. That young child grows up. Everything they think and feel reflect those ideas that were planted in their head. And you know what it brings about? It brings about pain and fear, self-loathing, discontentment, desperation, storms in the mind. So people seek rescue. Hopefully. Then they wind up with somebody like me, handsome, charming, knows all, sees all. And then I go and I tell them something like this, and they think, what? This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Doggone it, I cannot do it. And he's telling me that I'm deluded. I'm following a false thought. Well, let me go ahead and do his exercises and see what he's talking about. Do his training. Go to his website, which is www.neurosculpting.com, NEURO-sculpting.com. Let me sign up for that ridiculously low price. Let me get in there and find out. It is the most prolific mental training site on the web, with a total training path laid out for me to start. I start in month one. I'm in the boot camp. And I cannot believe what I'm seeing here. I had no idea how bad they fooled me, how bad they deceived me, and how they found a way for me to deceive myself into thinking that I can't do it, I can't have it, and I can't become it. I'm getting a clue here now that the only thing standing in my way is a little tiny microscopic burst of energy that, when my attention is buried in it, has the feel, sound, taste, touch of reality, but it's not real. If I learn to pull my attention back from this idea that was planted in my head and its accompanying emotions, I'm in a whole new world of possibility. If I can train myself to steady my attention, to direct my attention, to construct my own idea, my own thought, which matches objective reality rather than subjective, then everything's going to turn around. Because whether I believe I can or whether I believe I cannot, I am correct. So it's here in month one that I'm figuring out, you know what? This neural sculpting system is awesome. In it, I have discovered that whether I'm mowing the lawn or ruling the world, it's all the same. I can do one, I can be a ditch digger, or I can do the other. I can build my own business. I can go far in the career that I have. I can be a master at what I'm doing. I can go into this new adventure and do what it is I really want to do. I can feel free to love another person without reservation, without fear that is going to come back to haunt me. I can make the money I really want to make, and I can take off the limits out of fear that it won't happen. And the only thing I need to do is to control my attention, be able to master it, direct it, be able to relax and enjoy being alive in the moment, and then decide which thought serves me. And investigate which thoughts are of no use whatsoever. I didn't create them. They have nothing to do with me, and I will not obey them or live my life through them. And the good news is they are only thoughts. Do you know the nature of a thought? Have you trained yourself to realize what a thought is? That its job in your brain as just a little tiny burst of 3D energy is to rise up and then to fall away in a few moments? Have you trained yourself to stop latching on to every single thought that goes through your head, believing them? Have you trained yourself to instantly let go of a useless idea and to stop chattering to yourself all day long? To stop living in your imagination? You trained yourself to be here now so that you can see things and people and situations as they really are, as opposed to how you merely thought they were, so that you can actually perceive the real nature of power, the real nature of strength and wisdom. Have you trained yourself for these things? Most likely, you've not. Now, you might have taken a little meditation, a little yoga. You might have been in it for years. These things you should know these things. But, folks, I talk to meditators every day, and I'm telling you, there are things you should know that you're not learning in meditation. Ah, that's the president calling. Yes, sir, Mr. Obama, how you doing? Hey, listen, I'm going to need you to stop getting up in front of the cameras talking about how people are hurting out there. All right, talk to you later. All right, so this week we're also going to talk about our Mind Nourishing Book of the Week. And our Mind Nourishing Movie of the Week. I hope you guys have been listening for the past few weeks. Good works that I've talked about. I hope somebody went and looked at Joe versus the Volcano starring Tom Hanks. Love that movie. Yeah, I know it's shocking and jarring. I go from a rant to talking about a movie. That's me. Get used to it. Love Joe versus the Volcano. Inspiring. Anyway, this week we got a different movie and book of the week. We'll talk about that. And then we'll go over the 10 things you should be achieving and the 10 scenarios where your meditative practices should be rescuing you. Sponsor. This program is sponsored by NeuroSculpting. Let's go ahead and get a quick message from our sponsor, and we'll be back right after this message. Hi, I'm your sponsor. Mental Power Hour is brought to you by NeuroSculpting.com. That's NEURO-Sculpting.com. And our mental fitness training studio. Much of the stuff that you hear here on the show, the knowledge base that it comes from is right there in the training studio. It may take a while to get it all as you go through. After all, you're looking to literally change the structure of your brain cells to make your brain stronger, give you more mental endurance and flexibility, but to improve your intelligence, to deepen your wisdom, to beef up your frontal lobes so you can start operating from that genius level at will. Self-control, self-discipline, self-direction, contentment, joyful emotions. All these things can be yours with mental training. This week's mind-nourishing book of the week is, everybody got the pencil handy? A Rich Man's Secret. A Rich Man's Secret by Ken Roberts. Now, it's not a get-rich-quick book, although if I remember my research, Ken Roberts was an investment guy who sold those kinds of programs, but this book is actually not about that. In a way, it's about people who are looking for a way out of their situations, but they wind up finding something that's much more rewarding. Rich Man's Secret. It's about the truth of the human mind and our thoughts and our emotions and the veil, the semi real pseudo reality that we live through. Very entertaining book. It's a nice story as you read through. It's not very long. You can get the book at Amazon.com for a pretty good price. Just pay shipping and handling. Now, I'm not promoting any books to buy on my radio show page, but you know, at some point I may do that. Right now, I'm just telling you, go get the book. Call your public library, it may be there, but you can get it for pennies on the dollar at Amazon.com. A Rich Man's Secret by Ken Roberts. Some of you will get it when you read it. Some of you will scratch your heads because it goes beyond your thinking. And in the initial stages of training, when something lies outside the boundaries of your habitual thoughts, it becomes something to ponder, to read again and again until it starts to seep in, until you look around you and you realize, wow, that's what that was about. I see now, aha, eureka. That's the kind of book this is. My nourishing movie of the week, The Tale of Despero. Something contemporary. I'm not going to give you something that was 70s or 80s this time. The Tale of Despero, D-E-S-P-E-R-E-A-U-X. It's an animated movie. And it was out, it's actually out recently on DVD. When you watch it, sure, get a little entertainment, but I want you to listen to the words. Listen to the words. It's about becoming a hero in your own life. As a matter of fact, the movie of the week and the book of the week this week are both about becoming a hero in your own life. Now, back to the economy, but this time on your personal mental focus. Any of you doing meditation or any of you who are from the training studio, I want you to consider something. In your training, in your meditation, I want you to consider keeping a piece of paper or a notebook or journal to your side. And I want you to start a priority investigation of the nature of your thoughts. Not merely the fact that you have thought or thought flows through you or that you constantly talk to yourself or the topic of it. I want you to investigate the nature of the thought in combination with your efforts to control your attention. What happens when you attempt to direct your attention to a target, whether it be your breathing, a spot on the wall, a dot on a piece of paper, an image you form in your head? What happens when you attempt to manage your own attention? What happens with thoughts? What happens with the attention itself? What happens if you hear anything outside yourself, any external type of disturbance or distraction? You need to write down what happens. Because I'll tell you why. Often, when I'm training people, especially those who've been in meditation, I will ask them, what did you learn in the years that you've been doing meditation? I want you to tell me what you've learned about your attention, about your thought in relation to your attention, about the types of distractions that keep you from being in control of your attention. Have you learned anything about your relationship to a thought? Are you still under the delusion that every thought you think is you engaged in conscious thinking? Because it's not. You think thousands of thoughts a day, images, words going through your head, imitating your own voice, thinking it's you fighting and wrestling with the things going through your head. The truth is, no. Your brain is a thought-spitting machine all day long. And like I said last week, most of it is sheer nonsense. In your training, I want you to write down what happens when you start to look at the nonsense instead of participate and get carried away by it. What kind of possibilities present themselves as you discover that your thoughts have no interest in your controlling them? Your brain is not under your control at the beginning of your training. What does that mean? When you decide that you're going to pay attention to this particular thing and you have no interest in chaotic thought or goofing off or drifting attention or fantasizing, you have no interest in such things, and you go and you to pay attention to this target, to this attention target, and your brain says, uh-uh, I do what I want to do. What does that mean? What does it mean when you sit to do a task or engage an attention target of your own design and your body just starts going ballistic on you with impulses and anxiety? What does that mean? And what does it mean when you're able to take a deep breath, relax your muscles, and that starts to fade away? What does it mean when you're able to hold that attention target using just sheer, stubborn resolve, and the thoughts start to go away? What does that mean? It has amazing applications out in the world. And I talked about that. I'm not going to get deep into that now. But you need to be able to write down, what does it mean? What is the nature of thought? Why am I so out of control all day long? If you're not chronicling these things, if you're not being a scientist in your own life, who's supposed to know you if you don't know yourself? Know thyself. It wasn't good advice spewed out thousands of years ago. It has deep, profound implications. I had a religious lady, not knocking religion in any way whatsoever. I had a particular religious lady, I won't say which religion, tell me that she refuses to investigate her own thoughts because there's no telling what type of satanic forces are operating there. She literally feared to straighten up and gain ownership in her own mind because she thought there was a thought there, rather, that she believed that if she were to go in and take a look, she'd become possessed by Satan and end up going to hell. Such is the power of a thought driven into this woman's head, no telling how long ago. You need to know the nature of a thought. You need to become a scientist, and you need to chronicle it. What happens when you simply observe it and don't participate? What is its value then? What if it cannot tell you who you are because you're not immersed in it? What if a thought cannot tell you your limits? Imagine what it might mean if you can do what it is you really want to do because you no longer immerse yourself and believe an idea that says you can't or that there's something to suffer because of it. Become a scientist. Start investigating. Go to the training studio, www.neurosculpting.com, NEURO-sculpting.com. Now, last week, I started giving out a phone number where people can call me personally. And, of course, I didn't know what the result would be. I thought maybe I'd get a call here and again. But, actually, I was kind of overwhelmed. And, folks, I am sorry if I can't get back to you right away because I am inundated. This is taking off like a rocket, which, of course, I expected. But I still cling to to the personal value that I want to personally give you a hand. Now, many people are joining the training studio, which is great, and we have scheduled weekly training depending on the level that you're on, live training, interactive, and that's great too. But I did want to put out a phone number out there for anybody to call me for any specific reason. And when I check my messages, it just turns out that I can't get to them all right away. But I'm going to continue to give out the number. If you want to contact me personally, there's two ways you can do it. The phone number is 904-638-3851. I encourage you to leave a message, and I will get back to you. At the point where it simply becomes impractical and there's no way I can get back to everyone who calls, and that'll be soon enough, I will find a way to have someone else get back to you depending on the topic, and then we'll find a way to funnel you through. But for right now, 904-638-3851. And it may take a little bit of time, but I will get back to you, and I will get you the information that you need or direct you to the resource that you need, and we can work something out. Now, 10 things you should be achieving through meditation. Oh, yes, let me make sure that everybody knows. When you call the show, you have two options. You can either listen to the show, or you can press and be put into the queue so that you can actually talk to me personally on the air. If you press 1, you're going to be put into the queue, and you'll flash up on my switchboard here. And in the middle, in between my various rants, I'll look over and I'll see it there. And then I'll click on it, and I will call out your area code and the first 3 digits of your phone number. And so if you do press 1, make sure that you are listening for that, and I'll try to get to you as fast as I can. But the phone number to call. And David, if you could make sure that it's in chat right there too. David, my marketing guy, good buddy, is handling the chat room. So if you have any questions in chat, make sure to type it up. If in the middle of my ranting I can't see the question, when I go back into the chat room afterwards, I'll make sure to get you any answer that you put up there. So. I see John Fun. I lack concentration through. If I could keep my focus more often, I would be like what Brain Training Fitness is talking about. Indeed, too much of a grasshopper, actually. Now, I don't want to date myself, but anybody remember the show Kung Fu starring David Carradine? Yeah, his nickname by his master was Grasshopper. Oh, yes, Grasshopper. Yeah, it's true. You want to make sure there, John Fun, that you recognize the difference between focus and concentration. They're two different things. You do want to train yourself in mental concentration. And there's a few simple techniques you can use that'll definitely help you out. Within a 1-month period, there's no reason that you should not be able to quadruple your performance in mental concentration. And in that time, because I tell people you got to take notes, what's stopping you, what's getting in the way, and what kind of resolve and effort do you have to use in order to overcome that, to stay on point and to come back to point. Take notes. Within that time, you should learn the tactics, your personal tactics, that can keep you concentrated in any situation. There's no reason in a 30-day period of training for you not to have the fundamentals necessary for you to take out into the world and apply. Because I'll tell you this, like, say, let's take a simple mental concentration exercise. You take a piece of paper, an envelope, draw a little dot on it, very small, put it up about arm's length from you, at about eye height, especially a little bit above eye height, and you time yourself on how long you can look at that dot, keeping it at the center of your interest before a thought or wandering attention or external disturbance pulls you away from the task. You can time how long you can do that. And then you make notes on, okay, why did my attention wander there? What happened? Did I drift off into thought? Did I start fantasizing? Did I go off into the past, or did I dive into the future that doesn't exist? You know, you want to take those kinds of notes. You want to know what's kicking your behind when you need to be keeping your mind on what it is that you're doing, because you're going to then turn around and target that interference. You're going to become very familiar with it. You're going to look it dead in the eye, and you're going to walk right through that wall. 30 days, you should have enough information to make major progress. And there's another, the one thing someone brought up to me this week that we were talking about on the phone, especially when I speak to hyperactive people, you will encounter a sense of physical discomfort at some point. I call it simple mental fatigue, but there's an impulse that you can run into if you're hyperactive. If there's hyperactivity going on at the time, because, you know, not everyone is hyperactive all the time. There's in the general population, you know, it's only going to be sometimes, but at the wrong time. You want to look dead center. You want to take aim at that feeling, that physical impulse, and you want to practice centering your attention on your body and at will relaxing those muscles, taking the tension off your breathing, deepening it. Because if you can master that, that's half the battle of improving your ability to concentrate, which is twofold. Holding your attention in defiance of any type of disturbance and keeping your body in a relaxed state at the same time. You get those two things down, there is nothing that can stop you. I see Tales of Despero over in talking in the chat room here. I want to thank everybody who's in chat. I sure appreciate you stopping by. Again, if you have any questions in the chat room, just go ahead and type them out. I'll try to catch them. If I don't catch them when I go in at the end of the show, I'll answer them for you. If I don't catch you before you leave the chat room, go ahead and type in your email address in the chat room, and I'll get back to you. Hey, David, type out the phone number there in the chat room to be able to call the show, please, 347-327-9341. Well, actually, nope, it changed. I'm sorry about that, folks. It's 347-884-9397. Happens sometimes when you schedule your show, they'll change the call-in phone number. So it's 347-884-9397. 10 things you should be achieving through meditation. I know that many long-term meditators think they have it down. You're in a groove, you got your routine, you're the cool guy, cool gal in the class, you know what's going on. But there's some things I can ask any meditator, and I find out time after time. I will guarantee you that every 10 meditators I ask these questions, 9 of them have no idea, even though they have 3 years. And I know people who train other people in meditation, in yoga, who don't have these things down pat. Much of meditation that's out there in popular culture is surface, is shallow. Makes you feel cool, gives you something to talk about to other people. But the deepest value available through the various meditative forms, whether it's a sitting still meditation, mantra meditation, moving meditation such as Tai Chi and Buddhist mindfulness, the deepest value seldom gets to the majority of the participants. If you're in meditation, or if you're going to get into meditation and you're interested in it, first thing you should be acquiring practical knowledge regarding is the nature of attention. There is no way a person should be participating in any meditative practice over the long term and not become an expert on the characteristics and behavior of the faculty of attention. You should know everything about attention if you spend a significant amount of time in meditative practices. You deal constantly with attention in meditation. The way a top NBA player or NFL player or soccer player is able to manipulate the game and the ball and execute their moves, you should have that kind of skill and knowledge about the game of meditation. When it comes to attention. Attention is the first fundamental step, the fundamental key to changing everything, to experiencing an absolute paradigm shift in your life, mastery of attention, because it's through mastery of attention that you'll acquire the next skill, the next practical knowledge, which is the nature of thought, attention. What are its characteristics? What does it feel like to move it about? What's it like to willfully move your attention onto a thing and keep it there? What do you experience in that moment? Because these are all clues to greater personal power. Can you willfully broaden your attention, narrow your attention? Can you make it panoramic to take in everything around you and then do a close-up onto a thing on the outside? Can you then take that attention, your attention, willfully and purposefully put it onto your body in a panoramic fashion to where you can feel and experience everything about your body? The breeze going across your skin, the temperature of the room on your skin, the clothing on your body, any tension or anxiety that's going through it. And then can you narrow your attention into a close-up onto any part of your body willfully? You want a really interesting experience, guys? There's an exercise I developed called zone-to-zone attention training. And it has various degrees of difficulty. but it will teach you what you need to know about your attention. And not just the fact that your attention wanders or that it becomes interrupted by a thought or distraction from outside yourself, but it literally is like going to the gym, picking up a weight and moving it around in the way you like. Zone-to-zone attention control. Here's an example of one of the zone-to-zone exercises. You sit down in a relaxed place, preferably outside. I really like this exercise outside. Just breathe deep, kind of relax your body, and I want you to take your attention, your perception, and I want you to simply relax it and direct it panoramically to the outside world. I want you to be able to quietly take in everything about the world around you, the environment around you. But I don't want your head moving all over the place. I don't want your eyeballs moving all over the place. Keep still. I want you to allow your eyes, ears, nose, I want you to allow them to do their job without moving around all over the place and take in everything. Broaden your attention. That requires a bit of relaxing yourself to let go and let your bring everything in, everything around you. If you're outside, there's trees and parked cars, all that stuff. Just let it happen. Broad panoramic attention. Then take your attention and I want you to focus in close up onto a single thing in your environment. So you're going from a wide angle view as though you were sitting at a movie theater, taking in the whole screen, and then you're going to narrow it in to just one thing, close up, bring it in, close up. Then, after you've done that, you're going to take that same attention and you're going to draw it in and place it onto your body, your whole body panoramically. You're going to feel everything about your body. Again, the temperature on your skin, any breezes going across your skin, clothes on your body, any tension, anxiety. You're going to take it all in the same way that you panoramically took in your external environment. When you've gotten to that point, then you're going to narrow your attention onto one part of your body. Be the tip of your nose, your chin, your knee, your fingernail, whatever you want, you're going to narrow it. You've done that, then you're going to reverse it. You're going to go from close-up body, expand to panoramic body. When you're locked in, go close-up external environment. When you're locked into that, panoramic external environment. When you've done that, reverse it. You just do it over and over and over again. It can be a pretty weird experience at first, but what it will give you is the beginning of mastery and self-education on the nature of attention. First thing you should learn in meditation, first thing you should become an expert of is the nature of attention. Because it leads to the second thing, nature of thought. This is the biggie. Yes, there's other things after this. There are 10 things, but I'm telling you, you learn the nature of thought, everything else will fall into place. This is the biggie, the tough one. Because when you learn the nature of thought, you are opening the door to learning the nature of who you are, and what everybody else in the world is. You're taking on the granddaddy of all knowledge. You can go to Harvard or Oxford or Yale for 1,000 years and accumulate every bit of knowledge, academic knowledge you can. And it will never equate to this knowledge. The nature of a thought. You learn that. You learn that and study it like a scientist. It will change everything. There, you will literally see everyone in the world differently, especially yourself. Nothing will intimidate you. No thought will be able to stop you from doing what it is you intend to do. And nobody will be able to get in your way, because you will know the truth. And in this case, this really is the truth that can set you free. Whatever it is you're doing, whatever pursuit is occupying your time, whatever passion you've adopted for your life, you learn this skill, you acquire this skill, you'll become a trendsetter. You'll understand what almost nobody understands. And well, now that I'm on radio telling everybody, well, more people will understand. And I'm not unique in this respect. There are people who have begun, who've been teaching this. This is rare knowledge. It's the big granddaddy of them all. But I'll tell you this, out of thousands of people I've known throughout my life, there's only a couple who've tapped into this. And a whole lot of fakers who claim to know what they do not know. There's another thing you'll learn. The nature of thought. That is the second thing you should begin to know in meditative practice. And I tell you this, people, when I go through this list, if you've been meditating for any significant amount of time and these things are not a part of your cognitive arsenal, your knowledge base, to where they are saving you, to where they are giving you power, then you need to take a look at your meditative practices, because you're not getting the value that you should be getting from it. You may have to go ask your teacher. You may have to investigate what you're doing. But this is something you should know and hopefully will know if you're just at the beginning stages. If you're at the advanced stages, and what I'm talking about is not an integral part of your life, it's not something that guides you all throughout your day, it's time to reevaluate. A person who's a long-time meditator should be totally different than the average human being. If you know that you don't stand out, if people don't look at you and go, wow, there's something different right there. If people don't do that, take a look at your meditative practice. If your meditative practice is simply a form of entertainment and escapism from you, an egotism that you can tell other people, oh, yeah, I'm a meditator. Oh, yeah, meditate an hour a day. Yeah, meditator. It helps me relax. Yeah, after a big stressful day, I go in, meditate a little bit. Centers me. Yeah. If that's all you're getting out of meditation and you've been meditating for a while, time to take another look. You're not getting anything like you should be getting out of meditation. And the trend for a while has been, just like yoga, that people go in, they sign up, they pay a fee at the studio, and they're all dressed up in their yoga gear. the cool yoga stuff, their meditation gear. And you're going to sit down and you're going to do some breathing exercise. There's some real cool terms you can use. You can center on the thing, you know, crystal, vibrations. And then when it's over with, you can clap each other on the back, go out for a sarsaparilla or something. And then when you get home, you're fussing with your wife, you're fussing with your husband. Kids are driving you up a wall. You don't want to go to work the next day. You get to work. People are driving you nuts. You hate your boss. You're wondering when you're going to get a raise. God, you can't wait to get the heck out of here. So you can go home and meditate. You're not getting what you're supposed to be getting out of this. Time to take another look. You learn the nature of thought. What is a thought? And what is a thought in relation to you? What do you believe? What is a thought telling you? Do you assume that the thoughts you think are you talking to yourself? Man, you've got some learning to do. Few simple training exercises and you won't be holding that idea anymore. Rebellious mind. Your mind is not the friend you think it is. It is conceited egotism to believe every thought that flows through your noggin as though it is you. You do the proper training and you will drop that assumption because you will know for real, wow, I didn't know the truth. Now I suspect it. I'm going to look further now. I'm going to take this seriously. Meditation is no longer just entertainment for me. It's no longer just something I tell other people so I can feel cool and sophisticated so that chicks will dig me, so that my girlfriends will think I'm the bomb. No, this meditation is showing me something that I need to know. Now, I'm going to pay attention because it affects my entire life. Not just when I go to sit down and do my mantras or do my moving meditations or my mindfulness. No, this is showing me something that happens to me all day long, even when I'm trying to go to sleep. And I need to know what's going on in this mind because I can see the ridiculous thoughts that are going through my head right now are the same ridiculous thoughts that are going through my head when I'm out in the workplace, when I'm sitting down to dinner with the person I care about. All those insecurities, those childish, petty things that I take for me and that I express out to the world, those things have nothing to do with me. And meditation, if I'm doing it right, I can see that, but before I was just goofing off, no more. I've been meditating for years, and I'm fighting with everybody, arguing constantly. I'm trying to impress everybody in the room. I've got a big mouth. I embarrass myself, and you know what? I don't want to, but I'm still doing it, even though I've been meditating for years. I'm trying to be the center of attention when I am supposed to be centering my attention. Now I get it. It's not just for entertainment. This is for life education, for self-knowledge, for knowing myself. And the self I see is not me. It's thought-based. Now that I see the nature of thought, I cannot believe I was afraid of that guy. I cannot believe I've been kissing my boss's butt all this time. That guy's a jackass. all because a thought told me I had to. The fear that I've been living from. Oh, I cannot believe I've been working this job all this time, putting out all this energy, when I could have just as easily directed it to this dream I have. And I would be totally living the life I really want to live. All because a thought told me that's the way it had to be. Now I see the nature of thought, thanks to my meditation. Thanks to me not going in there to look pretty. Thanks to me not merely trying to relax a little bit after a hard day's work. Meditation is now my school. I'm learning more now about things that really matter, that have true value, than I ever learned in 8 years of community college. And so you sit and you finally get to the third thing. Your meditation should be giving you the practical knowledge of the nature of a physical impulse. You should know what's happening to your body when it's happening. You should know what's occurring in your body, the impulses, the compulsions, the pressure, the tension, all these things. Your meditation should be showing you this. And then it should also be showing you what to do about them. You should know at any given moment what's pushing you, what's causing you to rush around, what's causing you to bow down to this person who simply does not deserve respect, what's causing you to walk on the other side of the street when you should be walking tall down the path you already set, what causes you to sabotage yourself. And it's a 1-2 punch. It's the thought triggering the impulse. You study the nature of thought, you're going to know what's triggering the impulses in your body. And you're going to learn why the impulses, the tension, the anxiety, the pressure is there long after the thought has had its turn. And you're going to know, and you're supposed to know, how to resolve it instantly by will. Master those three things right there? Oh, please, come on. You'll be the superhuman in the room. Smartest man, smartest woman on the block. Those three things, and your meditation is supposed to have given them to you by now. You're not supposed to have the same problems that these other people have, and when you do have problems, they're not the same problems the way that other people experience them. Before I move to the fourth thing, wake up out there. I'm going to go ahead and take a call here. Taking a call from area code 978. First three digits are 358.
Hello.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is T. LaVon Lawrence. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. This is Melissa. And I've
Melissa?
Been intently. Yes, it's Melissa. I've been intently listening to your show, and I understand the basics of it, and I've been, like, you know, reading all about law of attraction and stuff, anything like that to expand my mind. I cannot get myself to meditate.
Really?
Any suggestions?
Tell me what it is. When you say yourself to meditate, do you try to meditate and it's just not working, or are you just planning to meditate and you never get around to it?
I just sort of do it at spur of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
That I think, now, okay, I'm gonna meditate.
Why would you want to meditate?
To quiet my thinking,
mm-hmm.
and to kind of clear out my head.
Okay. What do you do instead of meditation?
Probably run around more.
Let's see. I'm gonna meditate at 6 p.m. When 6 p.m. comes around, I'm gonna go for a jog. I'm gonna tell you something. It's common.
Okay.
You're not out there by yourself.
Okay.
Millions and millions of people are the same way. We wake up in the morning, and we have an intent.
Okay.
We have a cognitive problem called thought warpage.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We have a thought, and we want to hold that thought. We may even write the idea down.
Okay.
But our neural anatomy, your brain's anatomy, the way things function, is it's natural. A thought rises up, and it's supposed to fade away. It's just energy in your brain. It's sparks of biochemical energy.
Okay.
It rises up and it fades away naturally.
Okay.
While you're paying attention to it, you're using your working memory, which used to be kind of like short-term memory.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you're giving it your attention. You're in the thought. You're contemplating it. You're feeling it. You got the picture of it. If it's got a scent or a feel, you're in the thought. But the moment you let go of that thought, what's going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to fade away. So people write it down on their schedule.
Yep.
Now,
yep.
I'll try not to get too deep into it because it really gets profound.
You'd be surprised
but
I understand.
Yeah, it's for the audience.
Okay.
All those thousands of thoughts you think per day all go through the same process of rising and falling.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Any thought on the stage of your mind at this time utterly replaces the previous thought you were having.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that thought that you were immersed in before that felt real to you, you were going to do it, you were in that emotional state.
Mm-hmm,
when
mm-hmm.
you get into the next thought, it's as though that thought never existed.
Existed, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You're now in another thought. You're in a new emotional state, and it's real.
Yep.
Okay?
Yep.
And then you
totally
go on to the next one, and the next one, and the next one. Your working memory is concerned only with the one you're having right now.
Now, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right. The one you're having right now is the only one that matters to your brain.
Yep.
In order for you to take the thought you had earlier in the day, the intention that you had crafted earlier in the day and get it done, you're going to have to do something a little bit special, because if it's not a habit, you're going to have to build the habit, and that is you're going to have to revisit and resurrect that previous thought.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Challenge is, if you're going through thousands of thoughts all day long, and you're immersing into every single thought, something's got to remind you that you need to drop every other concern and deal only with the thought that needs to be resurrected. So you're really going to need two thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah. So meditation needs to be brought in to be able to just quiet things down and help you get...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll tell you what. Right now you have an academic or assumptive understanding of what it's like, because you've never really gotten into it.
Uh-uh.
But this problem of having an intent that you don't fulfill, the reasons behind it will become evident in your meditation if you do it properly.
I have gotten some of my best insights when I've been able to do it.
Oh yeah, there's times where there are semi meditations you can do. You can just sit and find a way just to relax.
Yeah.
Without going like deeply into meditation.
Yeah.
And your brain just starts firing off these great ideas and inspirations and everything.
It does.
But
and
here's
that's
the
usually,
thing.
So we get the truth with meditation rather than the stories that we make up in our. With our ego? Is that kind of what it is?
Well, here's the problem. So much meditation relies on imagination that is not true in order to do it, which is why so many people. Yeah. If you want to get your meditation done, you start out in the morning and you resolve that you're going to do it. And you know what? You don't do a thing
until
you do that meditation. You make it your absolute highest priority. First thing you get out of bed, before your feet touch the floor, you should already be preparing your mind, because the moment you open your eyes, and sometimes before you open your eyes, your mind has already started racing.
Oh, it does. It does.
It's out of bed going for it before you ever even touch the floor. And you know this. If you have to, you tape a card near your bed or right on your nightstand, so the moment you open your eyes, you see this card, and the card should read, slow down.
Yeah.
Or center.
Yeah.
Or brush your teeth and then meditate. Don't do anything else. I'm telling you, a thought will head and it will say that there is something else more important, and you should know that thought is a lie. It is only a thought.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
If anybody doesn't agree with this, they just, I don't know. I believe it and I agree with it. And
first thing you should do is do the meditation.
Fast.
That's his
and
job.
And I know it does. Yeah.
That's his
it
job.
It needs
your
a new
job.
Profession.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Your job, okay, is to change the relationship that your attention and your perception has to the activities of the mind.
Okay.
The mind is supposed to be your informant and your basically your scratch pad. You're supposed to use your mind to take notes on things. Okay? Not your mind tell you how the world is. Not your mind tell you what you're going to do. No, you tell your mind what's going to be. So make
what
that your first
be.
Priority in the morning, okay?
Okay.
Just set a note on your side table that you're going to get up and nothing else matters. You're going to brush your teeth. And when you brush your teeth, you are not going to do it mindlessly. You're going to use your brushing your teeth as a form of meditation. The moment your feet touch the floor, do not let your feet touch the floor without you being there, totally feeling it and knowing that your feet are touching the floor.
Gotcha.
Okay?
Gotcha.
All
Thank
right.
you
so,
for explaining this.
All right, then. Well, and don't forget, if you have any other questions, email me at trainer@neurosculpting.com, okay?
Can you put that in the room, because I'll probably do that because I want to remember that. Because my mind's going
too
fast.
In room.
Okay, thank you so much.
I'm gonna go ahead and write it. And great talking to you. And
keep listening and keep on learning.
All right, we sure appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye bye. All right, that was a good call. I'm gonna go ahead and type in chat here. The email address. Oh, you already did it. Where'd you go there? trainer@neuro-sculpting.com. I tell you what, people, you get in the right form, in the right practice of meditation, and this whole thing of deciding you're going to do something early in the day or at any point in the day, and then getting to the end of the day and you haven't done it, you'll discover the secret of not letting that happen, because you as a human being in any given moment are the sum total of your experience in that moment. And if you are wrapped up in a thought, your experience is whatever that thought is. And then a moment later, when you have a different thought, it's the same thing. We shift from person to person, from personality aspect to personality aspect, in an hour we shift 100 times. It is the secret of the ages, and when you see it, you will go, wow, I need to find a way to unify myself so that I am the same in the morning, in the afternoon, and at night. That way I don't go veering off course. There's things you got to do. There's tasks that are necessary throughout the day, but there's no reason that you decide that you're going to do one thing And then you wind up going all over the place and get to the end of the day, you haven't even thought about it. And as I explained to her, the reason is thought warpage. Your mind goes from thought to thought to thought. And any thought you're holding right now eventually shifts or warps into an entirely different thought. And if you can hold it, if you can willfully resolve to hold that thought, you're immediately doing a mental exercise and strengthening your brain. There are deeper secrets and more profound exercises than what I'm speaking right now, because eventually you go from concentration into mental focus, which broadens concentration and application across a whole range of steps to get to a particular goal. And then you get into willpower. Willpower, that's when you get into the unified mindset, to where when you wake up in the morning, you do not go from thought to thought to thought to thought in the illusion that whatever thought you're having matters at that moment. No, you stay the same all day long, no matter how many thoughts pop up, because you know better. You stop living from thought to thought, and you start living in your attention, in your awareness. You start becoming a consistent human being all the way through, and then that develops your ability to take all your thoughts, your thoughts that matter, and your emotions, and align them in a particular direction. That is the mastery I'm talking about. Now, I've got a very special person on the phone right now, and I know she's probably mad at me because I missed her last week, but I was on a rant. You know how I get. I'm going to go ahead and talk to her now. Janine, is that you?
Hi. Hi.
You ain't mad at me, are you?
I'm not. I thought, okay, I'm not going to call this time. I'm just going to listen in. I'm calling. But then I couldn't resist. And with the previous speaker, I couldn't resist. I said, okay, I'm going to call. I'm going to try.
How's your week been?
It's been good, and I've been looking forward to this, and it's really a great show, because real life, which is fantastic. I love the whole idea of real life meditation, because it's seriously making every minute of the day so valuable.
Exactly.
To put these skills that you're giving us, and every minute of the day is so exhausting, but so valuable. Exactly that. It just gives it a different meaning. But I have a question for you. So
sure.
I wake up in the morning, and the thoughts come flooding in, but then, you know, I'm doing what you say. I go, I wash my face, thinking, trying to feel the water, just focusing only on what I'm doing, the smell of the soap, what have you. And that's all okay. By the time I go through the day, now I'm not saying this is all working. Obviously, I want to do it, and I notice many of the thoughts, but I'm not all the time. I do get like hijacked, unfortunately, by a thought which I realize after 2 minutes, and okay, and it's so surprising that one decides, has the intention, thinks that he has the willingness and will, and you go saying, okay, I'm gonna brush my teeth, and this is the only thing I'm gonna do. 2 minutes later, I'm thinking about, oh, and what did my daughter say, and what do I need to do today? Okay, fine. But at least I'm trying. Now, my problem is the opposite. I go to bed, think exhausted, because I'm doing this all day, trying to be in the moment, living, and I am getting results. But by the... Hello.
You're there.
Oh yeah, okay. Because she told me I'm off the cue. Okay, so I get to the time where I want to go to bed, and all these thoughts say, "Oh, now you're exhausted," and they all just come rushing. I'm walking. What happens is that in the middle of the night, I just get savagely awakened by ridiculous thoughts that were supposed to do that during the day, and it's just unbelievable. It's making my sleep difficult, because they're just all there. It's like I try to avoid thinking about them, or I take my attention off some thoughts during the day, and they just attack at night.
Mm-hmm. You're the second person this week who's brought up that issue. And I'll tell you the one secret, and you'll have to study it to see its truth.
Okay.
It is not the awareness of the thoughts that is making you tired. Although it does take effort and it does burn energy in your brain, okay, to turn your attention to such things. It's not the effort of attention that's exhausting you. It's the thoughts themselves that are depleting your energy because they are constant. And remember, every thought you have requires energy to occur in your brain. And you are having thousands of them throughout the day. And one of the issues any trainee is going to have is once you see them and once you start to detach yourself from them, you're going to notice what they do in quiet moments. When you lay down, when you just kind of sit to gaze out at nature, you're going to see them. And the only difference is, and it may sound shocking, is that it's always been happening, only now you're noticing it. Always been happening. And they have a cycle. When let's say you're laying down and you're getting ready to get to sleep, you can see the thoughts happening. The very fact that you now see them shocks you and causes more to come up in reaction to the disturbance. In a vicious circle. And the one thing you can do is to get yourself a different attention target. And one of the best ones, there are actually two, but you can combine them into one, and that is to place your attention on your breathing and the relaxation of your physical form, no matter how long it takes. And this is, it's sometimes difficult to contemplate because when you're aware, you're not asleep. So you're asking yourself, well, how am I going to sleep if I'm aware? Okay. Trust me on this one.
Okay.
You'll go to sleep two ways. You'll go to sleep in a fit under the spell of thought, or you'll go to sleep in a relaxed fashion with a hopefully calm mind by turning your attention to your breathing in your body in a simple, relaxed, calm breathing exercise. And it may seem that it's going to take a long time, but all you're doing in that moment is defying your thoughts. You're not fighting them. You're not resisting them. You're just turning your attention elsewhere. And it may take a little time, but they will calm down as your body and your breathing relax, and they become the only thing you're interested in. Give it a shot.
Okay, super.
And don't forget, you're going to apply the same thing in real life.
Yeah.
Out in the world.
Absolutely. Okay, so it's not the awareness of the thought, it's the thought itself.
You'll know that when you increase the awareness.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, well, thank you for calling. I love it when I get a call from Switzerland. It makes me feel so sophisticated.
then I'm going to take that. You just said it. So, if I call every week, okay, you're invited the call. So I'm going to call
right.
every week. There you are.
Hey, you thank bother you. Me whenever you want. I'll talk to you in a bit.
Thank you, too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, that was a call from Switzerland, one of my favorite trainees. Folks, when you get into this manner of training and you feel yourself exerting your attention, because it takes exertion to be able to control your attention, you're going to feel a sense of fatigue. It burns energy, but let me tell you, the truth on this is that it's not so much the effort of attention that's exhausting you, but that the reason you have so little energy available is because the hundreds and thousands of thoughts that are going through your head each day all are burning energy. And when your thoughts begin to calm down, when you get to the point in your day where you can get up, brush your teeth, get dressed, go out the door, go to work, go to your business, and come home, and you have not blown your day being hijacked and being immersed in hundreds of thousands of thoughts that are burning energy, you'll have lots more energy left. And eventually you will discover that it is not your effort of attention that's tiring you out, but the things that are interfering with your attention that are exhausting you. Before you ever even begin this training, you get to the end of the day and you're tired. You come home from work and you're like, I need a beer. You're not practicing attention then, so why are you so tired? Sometimes it's because you ate lousy food. You need to be able to energize your body a lot better, but mainly something's been consuming that energy, and it has been those thousands of culprits that have been all over you like demons all day long. First three things you should have been achieving through meditation: you should know the nature of attention, or be learning the nature of attention in detail so that you can use that knowledge. You should know the nature of a thought. That's the big granddaddy, the big kahuna, the high muckamuck. Nature of a thought, because that opens the door to everything. That opens the door to personal power. That makes it so that you can talk to any guru. And I'm not a guru. You can talk to any master or guru and know exactly whether they know what they're talking about, or are they just blowing smoke? You then know, or should be learning, the nature of a physical impulse. Self-control, self-discipline springs from this. And I don't mean a hard, forceful, self-domineering form of self-discipline. I mean the normal, natural, relaxed state of not being forced by an impulse or a compulsion to do something that you have not determined to do, or to feel in a way that you have not determined to feel. Fourth thing you should learn, should be achieving through meditation, is to know the nature of belief and assumption. If the nature of thought is the big granddaddy, then the nature of belief and assumption is the next stage. The next one that'll knock your socks off, because once you know the nature of thought, you then begin to question every assumption and belief that's etched into your brain. Here's where you start to investigate the suspicion you begin to gain that you may have been deceiving yourself about a great many things. My young Jedi, you've been wrong about a great many things. Star Wars, Episode 6. The nature of belief and assumptions. Merely because somebody told you, you choked it down, you choked down, and it became reality for you no longer. Because now you know the nature of thought. So what thoughts have you mistakenly taken for your own? You'll see them in your meditative practice if you're doing it right. You'll see them creep up, creep in. You'll also see them, if you're doing your meditation right, when you go out and talk to other people, when you watch TV and you see the news, you'll see those prejudices and biases start to creep up as you start to express yourself, or your mind starts to express what's programmed into it. No good Republicans. Man, those Democrats don't know what the heck they're doing. They're trying to rob us. Don't trust those libertarians. Communists. Misogynists. Feminists. I don't like this person. I don't like that person. Government should be doing this. Government should be that way. I don't like that trend. I don't like what's coming. All these young people, what are they doing? What are they into? Ideas planted in your head. I'm not good enough. I should look like this, like that image I saw. And because I don't look like that, I'm less of a person. So I'm going to go to the gym, going to work out like crazy so people will look at me and dig my seam. God, I hate the gym. What am I doing in here killing myself for? Belief and assumption. All those people are going to go to hell. Those people will never get into heaven. God is this, Satan is that, this person is demonic, blah, blah, blah. Beliefs and assumptions, things fed to you that you never bothered to investigate. That leader who's telling you how to think, who to be, and how to react can't even control his or her own life. They don't know anything. You're going to learn that by properly applying your meditative practices so that you can learn the nature of a thought. Then you learn the nature of belief and assumption, and you begin to realize the people that you invested an idea of wisdom in don't know anything. They don't know squat. You're going to know infinitely more than them once you know this. Your leaders who have their finger on the button are a bunch of spoiled, petty children. Maturity, wisdom, now you're looking at it. Nobody owns you. Nobody controls you. Not when you know the nature of thought. When you finally figure out the root and effect of belief and assumption, my gosh, I felt so confident about that. I was absolutely certain, and now I realize how foolish it was. Certainty is an illusion of the ignorant. I don't need to be certain about anything. I've been relying on certainty for so long that I can't even do what it is I want to do with my life because I can't get that feeling of certainty. Because there's a fear thought there, and I've assumed it was real. I believed in it, just as I believe that without certainty, I can't go out there and start my own business. I can't expand what I'm doing. I can't talk to that man. I can't go and try to woo that woman because of a certainty that I've been feeling. And it turns out that certainty is a joke. I don't need it. It is nothing. It can't do anything for me. I don't need certainty. I need knowledge and I need insight. And I will walk with fear screaming in my ear and do what it is I have determined to do. And it won't be able to stop me. The nature of belief and assumptions. There are millions of people, thousands of organizations on this planet whose sole purpose is to put you in a box. And keep you there. You know the nature of belief, the nature of assumption. Guess what now you benefit from? You now can have a knowledge and understanding of the nature of fear. And next week's show is all about fear. When you go to the show page and you read the description, you'll see that we're going after fear next week. So I'm not going to talk about a lot about it now. But we're going after fear. Unnecessary, illusional, delusional. Fear. Master it by changing your relationship to it, to distance yourself from the feelings and effects of something that simply does not matter. A simple signal in your brain. Do what it is you set out to do, what you decided to become, and get what it is you decided to have in your life, and it won't matter that there's this voice barking in your ear because it is nothing to you. Because it is nothing. We'll address mastering fear next week. Then you're going to want to know the nature of awareness in the psychological present. If you've been in this one, to me, is one that, to me, there's always no excuse for it. But unfortunately, I've discovered talking to hundreds of meditators that it's not that common for meditators to have a grip on the psychological present. Most of the ones I've talked with have some academic concept, but a great difficulty in practical application. You should at all times know where you are, what you are doing. You should know that you're in the room. You should know what you're thinking, what you're feeling, and you should be in a position of authority to ensure that no thought hijacks you, that you don't go out of control, and that you do not sabotage yourself, that you do what's right at all times, as opposed to what you're pressured into. You should know. You should be here now, the psychological present. In the psychology books, they tell you it's about a three-second window, but when you're in control of your attention, you can be here now, not caught up in thoughts of the past, not caught up in thoughts of the future. Not caught up in fantasy, not taken away by desire, but to be here now in the present moment and be able to enjoy the actual experience of being alive. The reason so many people are suffering from depression and acute anxiety is because their minds are not in the present moment. If you're studying meditation, you should be learning how to be in the present moment in as much of your day as possible. You want to enjoy your job. You want to get rid of the experience of being tired after you come home from work and not wanting to go to work, not wanting to deal with your children. Learn to be in the present moment, the psychological present. And it should be teaching you the nature of personality. If you know the nature of thought, and you've been educated on physical impulse, belief and assumption, fear, and you can keep yourself in the psychological present and observe what's going on in your own mind and emotions, you will begin to understand the truth of personality. Most of us think that we have a personality, and I'm telling you, you shift from characteristic to characteristic to characteristic all day long. You're a different person right now than you're going to be in an hour, because you're going to be in an entirely different thought in an hour from now. You're not going to be the same person. You're only imagining that you're the same person. Right now, you're courageous. An hour from now, you're going to be afraid and worried. And when you're in that state, that's what you are. You get up in front of other people, and all of a sudden you start to change. You don't treat your friend the way that you normally treat them when someone else is around. Your personality changes. Your personality is a thought-based construct. If you're in meditation, this is something you should be looking into, and it's something that should reveal itself if you're doing it properly. All that noise going on in your head, you're learning to try to quiet it down, to try to be still, to hold yourself in the center, to center yourself. Well, eventually, all that noise and chaos is supposed to slow down. It's supposed to come to a standstill. And so, your investigation, your practice of meditation should be educating you and giving you knowledge about the nature of silence, mental quiet. And that should be your reward for doing the meditative practices. Eventually, you should be able to experience the sheer reward of not being assaulted by thought all day long. And not just in your meditation session, that should be training you to go out into the world in that same state of mental quiet. And then you will know, be able to look in the face of other people, no matter how calm they appear on the exterior, you will know that that person's walking through a storm on a clear, sunny day. You'll be the calm in any storm. And when you're able to experience that mental quiet on a consistent basis, you're not shifting personality. You're the same from beginning to end, alpha and omega in your own day, in your own life. Now you're learning about the nature of a unified mind. Now you're getting and touching the possibility of willpower. And when you are able to live and express yourself from this quiet, unified mindset, now you're learning what Emerson wrote of, what Thoreau wrote of, Marcus Aurelius wrote of, Buddha wrote of, self-sufficiency. The nature of self-sufficiency, an end to self-deception, of self-inflicted pain and misery, and living a life that's not your own. These are the things you should be learning through meditation. And if you're not learning these things, time to take another look. Time to take a closer look. Time to start being serious. Your meditation should be totally rewarding your life, not just relaxing you a bit, not just serving as entertainment or egotistical thing, a way for you to brag of, hey, here's what I do, here's who I am. You should be learning the nature of attention, the nature of thought, the nature of physical impulse, the nature of belief and assumption, the nature of fear, the nature of awareness of the psychological present, the nature of personality, the nature of silence, the nature of a unified mind, and the nature of self-sufficiency so that you can be a genuinely powerful human being living the life you're supposed to be living. And you know what else is great? I'm not going to be able to tell you the 10 scenarios. The rants have won out. I've got 10 scenarios where your meditation training should rescue you. Unfortunately, I'm not even going to be able to go over it next week because I've got fear that we're going to deal with next week, how you can transform your life that way. So here's what I'm going to do for you. The 10 scenarios where meditation training should come to your rescue, I'm going to put it up on my Blog Talk Radio show page. And you can get it at www.blogtalkradio.com/brain_fitness, B-R-A-I-N _fitness. I'm going to go ahead, I'm going to post that blog. It'll probably be tomorrow that I'll put it up, and it will be 10 scenarios where your meditation training should come to your rescue. And I'm telling you, you're going to like them. I want you to know I appreciate your tuning in. I also appreciate your patience, because you know me, I love to rant. I've had an absolute great time. And remember, the Mental Power Hour is brought to you by Neurosculpting.com and the Neurosculpting Training Studio, www.neurosculpting.com, N-E-U-R-O-sculpting.com. I want to thank David for handling the chat room for me, and I'll go in there in a second and see if there's any questions that can be answered. Thank you, Melly66. Certainly appreciate your stopping by. Animus, Marcia, certainly appreciate it. All the guests in the chat room, I want you to know how grateful I am for that. D.A. Williams, hey, buddy, I certainly appreciate your stopping by. We need to talk. And everybody else who's been listening in, if you have any questions, email me at trainer@neurosculpting.com, or you can go ahead and give me a phone call, and like I said, I'll try to get back to you as soon as I can. 904-638-3851. Be sure to leave me a message. Thank you for listening to the Mental Power Hour.